Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following is an iHeartRadio podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. Our show is about to begin.
And now, part two of our interview with Cobra Kai composers Leo Bierenberg and Zach Robinson. This is The Soundtrack Show.
Yeah, there's some amazing cues in the show, and there's some serious shredding going on as well. So I want to kind of dive into the 80s part of this. So you're saying, Zach, that's all you on guitar? You're the guitar guru? It's
not all me. I record basically all the scratch demos, and then I always say this in every interview. It's like taking a bath. I pass it on to a better guitar player, and then I get to hear it in a really nice, clean way without the gunk. But no, we have Andrew Sinewick is one of our players. He's played on all three seasons. He's an amazing session player. And then we have some guest like guitar players as well. We have Pat Lukens, who goes by Myrone, he's kind of the specialty shredder. So some of the extra special shredding gets done by him.
Wow.
And then some of it is me. I think some of it's kept is me.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, some of it's definitely you.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to shy away from maybe sort of leaning into the sort of rock synth pop influences. If you want to talk about any particular cues, yeah. You know, like I'll give you an example. One of the things that I love, well, first of all, and anyone listening, yes, we are going to have some spoilers in this. So if you haven't watched all of season three, you probably should. But the end cue, sort of the Miyagi metal cue, had me grinning from ear to ear.
Good.
That arrangement almost had this like upbeat
power metal.
Yeah, power. Where do these influences, like what are some of your influences on sort of the rock synth side that leaned into this? I'll give you another example. I hear Jerry Cantrell in Hawks stuff because you got that crazy bend. You know, the drum, you know, I hear this kind of, it's not just 80s, it's 80s, but it's also 90s, you know, even Johnny's themes, there's like this kind of very 90s grunginess to even to the way he's dressed. Anything come to mind, like when you pick up the guitar and you're like, God, this sounds like X or Y.
Sure. There's a lot of information here. Gotta parse it down. I think in terms of Miyagi metal, like, JJH said to us, we need the ending of season three to have just a kick-ass end credits, and it's supposed to represent kind of the coming of the dojos, right?
Right.
So like they're going to be working together, and we had not used that Bill Conti material basically in any other way besides kind of like in a classic Bill Conti way, or interpolating it with like strings, pizzicato. So it was really, actually it was one of those things where we left spotting and I was like, okay, I know what we're going to do. And I think it took an hour. Like it was very quick.
Wow.
And it was just like, all right, we're done. And that's the kind of thing where, I mean, influences like I listen to a lot of like power metal bands, like this band Dragon Force. I just kind of grew up with a lot of like, again, like video game music, anime music. Like it's pretty feel good, but it's got a lot of like strength to it. And it just kind of makes you smile. That's kind of what it is. It's so over the top, like a synth solo and guitar harmonizing everything. We got my friend Luke Silas to play drums on that, who I grew up with. He was in this video game metal band Dracula Mountain with me. So we love to have, in fact, I actually love how much metal we kind of get into the score. Like JJH have never, we've done some pretty like heavy, you know, in the new one, Carol the Cobras too. Like,
I was gonna
like
bring up Carol the Cobras
in that.
Yeah.
Like, and they're just like, cool. So they're down with it, and we love it. We think it kind of represents, you know, the newer kind of Cobra Kai sound, but we hit Johnny as well with the hair metal. And then you're right that there is a lot of that kind of early 90s, I would also say mid to late 80s, Don Henley, Bryan Adams, like it's like kind of soft rock, right? Like kind of, I'm thinking of Johnny's Story in particular. People always ask about Johnny's Story. There's that kind of like chorus guitar. Yeah, and I think that to me at least represents kind of Johnny post Karate Kid, kind of coming of age, like what in 86, 87, he would be like 19 or 20. And I just have always kind of like, I feel like we've talked about kind of what is that sound in between Karate Kid and Cobra Kai? Like, where do those characters live? And I think we both kind of landed on that type of sound. And Johnny's Story is a great representation of that. And same with Ace Degenerate, which is like Johnny's theme song, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would say.
Da, da, dum, dum. That one, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that you're immediately kind of telling. Oh, let's talk about themes. Let's just talk about themes. You know, you have a ton of themes in this show. Yeah, how do you come up with the themes? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, one thing I was gonna say before, and then I forgot when Zach was talking about like the different parts of the palette, and you were asking how it all works together. And I think a huge, 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 huge reason that it works together is because the score. It being our various sound worlds, hair metal, synth wave, orchestra, is because the score is highly, highly, highly thematic within all of those sound worlds. And so we have a lot of material that we can reinterpret in a million different ways and like hybridize in a million different ways and reharmonize. And so you never really lose like the thread of all the thematic development as you're like watching a season and multiple seasons. And so I think that the themes are doing a lot of heavy lifting for us in keeping it all sounding like one big score.
That's your cohesion right there, like, is the thematic lines.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of, and they're rarely even just like motifs, like they are melodies. So we got a lot of them. I guess we should go through and we should list a couple just because I think, it's fun for people to pick up on in that kind of Johnny world. Like we said, we have Ace Degenerate is one of the first themes. It's probably the first theme we set up in the entire series. when Johnny is waking up after the flashback in episode one. You know, it starts out on like a electric bass playing the melody, mm-hmm. Which is kind of just like a, at the time, like we were thinking like, yeah, we want like a sound that like isn't necessarily just like guitar, but still kind of has this like, it's sort of like a more mature masculine thing, which is where we find Johnny at that time. But by the end of season three, you hear that melody being played by like 8 French horns in unison during some of the climactic sequences. So
I love,
you know,
it.
It takes a big journey.
I just got goosebumps. I love it. That's great.
Yeah, the Johnny story material. We've got one of our biggest themes. I think the first time you hear it is in episode 6 of season 1, the end of episode 6. It's called Quiver on the album. And that is when Hawk walks back in the dojo as Hawk for the first time transformed. And there's a bass there that goes bodo, 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 that you hear a ton. And then there's a melody on guitar. Bum, 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 bum. And that, you know, starts as like guitar lick by the season finale of episode 1 during the tournament is sort of now become like the Cobra Kai dojo theme, and you hear it on orchestra. And since then, it has always been like the Cobra Kai dojo theme.
Are we going to go through every single one, Lee?
No,
that's a great example.
A couple examples that then become prominent in season 3, I think are good ones.
Hour.
You know, in episode two of season one, we set up, there's a flashback where like Daniel is, you know, remembering training young Sam, and we wrote a piece we called Miyagi Memories that is like a more orchestral introspective thing. Ba bum 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 bum. And that, I mean, we've heard it every which way now. There's a great moment in season 3 that uses that actually in the chop shop fight in episode 2, which is like almost like a video game rock cue in a lot of ways. But like you hear that melody like front and center when Daniel starts kicking ass.
And now for a brief intermission. We return now to the Soundtrack Show.
We've got one major part of season 3 is all of the John Kreese backstory.
I was going to mention Kreese. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah, and there's a few themes that we kind of set up that like really got to blossom in season 3, one of which is established in the last scene of season 1 when Kreese shows up at the dojo, you know, cliffhanger ending. It starts out as a very kind of like Western bad guy guitar in a lot of ways, and sort of has it's a pretty simple theme that just is boom, 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 boom. Mm-hmm. And then it leads into this accompaniment figure that I think is really identifiable. That's like a boom, 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 boom. And both of those independently are like massive parts. Like we weave them through season two a lot. And in fact, one thing we really enjoy about season two is like, you start to see how Kreese's influence is like more and more suspect in all the way into evil. And so we like to use that theme sometimes when Kreese isn't on screen and we're just sort of showing, you know, the results of his
teachings,
you know, manipulations, which is really his kind of most dangerous element. But in season three, you get into a bunch of the backstory. And so you hear that theme, you hear that accompaniment figure. There's another theme that is actually in the season two end credits. It's a piece called Awake the Snake, and it's on the season one album because it's one of the first ideas we came up with for the show. And then it kind of ended up homeless, but we were like, well, this still sounds like the show to us. So like, it feels like an important milestone. And there is a kind of arpeggiating figure that opens that. And that became like, you know, the backbone of the young Kreese story in a lot of ways. We, you know, it plays very well patriotically. It plays very well in like a Apocalypse Now style psychedelic detuned synthesizer fantasy psychopath zone. And it plays really well on full orchestra with like strings, you know, soaring on it. It's very malleable. God, there's probably like 10 more I could go down in terms of all our themes, but
No, this is great.
We literally will be here all day. But,
well,
that's a sampling.
I want to talk a little bit about, since you mentioned season three as well, I was so surprised when Daniel went to Okinawa and then found out that the production went to Okinawa, especially after filming Karate Kid 2 in Hawaii. But it gave you guys a chance, you know, the Secrets of Miyagi-Do, those kind of cues, to really kind of expand your sound a little bit into more than just the sort of Miyagi spiritual side, but also kind of the action side. I mean, like, there's a lot of taiko drums in season three. Can you talk a little bit about what it was like for you guys to see those scenes with Chosen and all of Okinawa, and, you know, kind of what your thoughts were about, you know, how do we approach this? And there's taiko drums with Kreese as well, you know, so just kind of textually, you know, the show, you know, how does the show follow all the changes that are being thrown at you?
This one felt pretty natural to us. I think in terms of Okinawa, our biggest departure from the normal kind of Cobra Kai sound was, we do, speaking of all the themes, like, we do have a new theme, like an Okinawa theme, that you hear on the album's called Return to Okinawa, but it's when Daniel sees Kumiko for the first time, that it's that music, and we actually play over Karate Kid 2 flashbacks. And I think, rather than, you know, there's a lot of kind of sweepingness to the Okinawa sound that we really embraced. I think in terms of like influences, like, I mean, we love the Studio Ghibli movies and like Joe Hisaishi music. And again, anime, like we are very influenced by that. And there's something really genuine feeling about it. And we kind of honed in there, and I got a sanshin, which is an Okinawa instrument. It's kind of like a banjo-y sounding, related to the shamisen, three-stringed, fretless instrument. So we use that a lot. And then, yeah, in terms of percussion, like, we use taikos in everything, even from season one, we've used taikos. But I think this season we actually worked with this percussionist, MB Gordy, who we actually sat down with him, and like, before we started even getting footage, we sat down with him and he pulled out like a bunch of different drums, and we just created some beds with him. And that contributed a lot to Secrets of Miyagi-Do. The fights were chosen, like on this, there's a track called Ghosts of the Past where you hear that. And, and then also in the final fights, like there's tons of that. But I think going to Okinawa was very special, I'm sure, for the creators and for Ralph Macchio, like just to go back. Or they never went, sorry. They shot in Hawaii. But just to
go back to those storylines, yeah.
To go back to the storylines, so there was something very emotional about it. We wanted that in the music for sure. And I think that's some of my favorite stuff on the album too. Return to Okinawa, which combines a bunch of cues, is kind of a suite. We love that.
The Soundtrack Show will continue in a moment. We return now to the Soundtrack Show.
There's also, you know, on the flip side of this, a ton of humor in the show, but also in the music. There's one track that makes me laugh out loud, which is The Internet.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it sort of captures...
I have a funny story about the internet.
It captures everything that Johnny claims to despise as he's sitting there. You know what I mean? It's got that real genius Revenge of the Nerds kind of...
That's so funny.
Yes, exactly.
You say that.
Anyway,
exactly.
Go ahead.
That's yeah. So
also,
funny.
There's a fun sequel to it in season three also called WebMD.
Right.
Zach, tell your story.
Just really quick. This is just a funny story, and it's really funny you say that because we got that scene, the internet scene, and we scored it a few types of ways, and most of them were kind of in this rock way that kind of like played like a montage, or it used Johnny's theme in more of the standard kind of rock, like kind of rock ensemble way that we did, and they just were like, this isn't hitting the way we want to hit it. And we actually, by the way, we normally know what they want. Like, we're actually pretty good at getting kind of like versions in very fast to them and them approving it. But this one was taking a long time, and they finally get on the phone, and like Hayden or Josh was like, okay, it needs to feel like Weird Science, or it needs to feel like Revenge of the Nerds. And then literally just like hung up and were like, okay, like now you've opened up the vortex. So the first thing, and then it was like, okay, once we knew that it was going to be that type of vibe, this is where the kind of like DAD, my 80s synthwave project comes handy, because it came very fast. And,
oh,
and
this so is, funny.
Again, it's kind of like a modern version of the 1980s internet, the way like the 1980s viewed the internet, the 90s viewed the internet,
yeah.
in that sound. And we love that one. We play that one live too, which is so fun.
Oh, that's awesome.
One thing I want to just say, because I think it relates to that story and it also relates to a lot of the Okinawa music, is like I sometimes think of this like score. It's like Boo in Dragon Ball Z, the like bad guy who like absorbs other people and then like takes their power level. Like once like JJH opened a door for us to like bring in some new part of the palette, like it's never a one-off. We like bring it in and then like put it, like it finds its way like all over the place and like develops down the line. Like we just kind of keep creating this giant Boo of a score.
Yeah.
Well, that's funny. Well, you mentioned that, you know, the score is very bold. You guys are not shy in your writing. I mean, that really comes through. Did you ever have a cue where you're like, they're never going to go for this when you submitted it? Or is it always, as you mentioned, like pretty lockstep with the creators?
Did we have like a gamble cue? I don't know. We are pretty lockstep with them, especially now. Mm-hmm. And like, I think kind of the more, you know, one thing about like doing a show like this, where like there's a lot of seasons and like the scope gets bigger, and like we feel like we really get to contribute to kind of like the I don't know, the brain trust of the show in a lot of ways, just by like writing this music that then when they're writing the next season, they're like listening to the music, or you're cutting in the music. Like it all kind of like feeds together into just like helping the spirit of the show evolve. And I've so like, I feel like the more into it, the deeper into it we go, I feel like the more they are open to just like turning us loose. Zach, what is your example?
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought you were done.
The
first thing that we wrote for the show was what is called Strike First, which is one of our more popular tracks because it ended up becoming the Netflix end credits track.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the most popular one. But that one, I would say, that was kind of our big pitch. Like we said, they attempt it with like a Bourne Identity cue or something. And it just, there was no fun to be had. Right. And that's not saying that the music that John Powell wrote for Bourne Identity.
No, I get it. It's just different vibe.
It just
not fun. It's a very different approach to watching a grown man beat up teenagers.
Right. So we knew, and that's exactly like Leo just nailed it on the head. It's like, we needed to lean into it. And that's how we did it. And we said, this is going to play as if this is the music that Johnny hears in his head when he's beating the shit out of these teenagers. And I remember, I don't know if Leah, like I was very nervous about sending that because I was like, if they don't approve this or if YouTube doesn't approve this, then like, what are we going to do with the show? Because this is kind of
this is our pitch.
And they loved it, and the rest is history. But that was, I remember that was like a big trial.
And sounds like it was kind of your statement as to what the sort of, not definition, but the identity of the show was going to be.
Absolutely.
Yes. Which leads me to a question about temp music, because you mentioned Bourne Identity. I don't think John Powell, you know, it's credited as being like one of the most influential scores of the last 20 years or whatever. Was it in the 2000s? When did Bourne Identity come out? Anyway, it's an amazing score, but it's a totally different vibe. What was the temp process like when you came on? What did the show feel like? Because it seems to me that you guys imbued a lot of your sort of desire for what the show should be into the show. Like the music kind of gives it that lift of tone, you know, the fun, you know, it's nostalgia, but it's also, it's okay to, you know, because it's not like, as you mentioned, a grown man beating teenagers. It's kind of like, you know, it's a nostalgia piece in a way. What was it like listening to temp scores, and what is it like watching an episode before you're able to work on it? Is it filled with music, or do they just kind of let you have at it?
Nowadays, a lot of the temp music, like in season three, is our stuff from earlier episodes. And so then we're just like, cool, well, we're not going to reuse that again. Let's write some new stuff. So it actually serves a pretty useful role in like not causing temp love with anybody, because like, I don't know, it's already from the show. So like, sometimes like we can use a theme that was in the temp score. It's our theme that like thematically makes sense, but like wouldn't want the same kind of presentation. To be honest, I don't even remember what was in the temp for a lot of season one.
Me neither.
I don't think there always was a lot of temp, because I think once,
well, that's a good sign that they didn't hold you to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because if like, you were trying to chase
kind of find us. Yeah. Once we found a sound, I think it was a lot of like, well, let's not worry about the temp. Like let's, you know, insofar as, you know, you have to submit early cuts and whatnot, especially during like a season one to networks and producers to like get them to sign off on it. But, we've never really had a lot of temp problems.
Sometimes they temp fights with songs. For energy. So like they tempt what is now Hallway House Tape with like Welcome to the Jungle. So like we were replacing Welcome to the Jungle, which didn't work. I don't think anyone ever really thought it was going to work, but that's a lot of it is for energy. I'll tell you what the hardest thing is to replace with temp is Conti. Like if they put a Bill Conti cue in, I'll back up and just say that there are rules to how much Conti you can put in, just like from the publisher or whatever. So you can only put a couple minutes of the actual recordings of Bill Conti. And that actually might even differ depending on the movie. Like Karate Kid 1 has different rules than Karate Kid 3.
Right.
Right. But, it has to do with who owns the master recordings.
Right.
Right.
So a lot of the times if there is a special,
and the union,
sometimes we have lost a few battles to Bill Conti. And we have written stuff that we were like, oh, let's just like try to replace it. And we've lost that, but everything else there now it's, they'll put in, you know, they'll put in, maybe sometimes tracks from like Paul Herzog scores, like from Bloodsport or, mm-hmm. Kickboxer or something like that. Cause they know that that's the vibe we like anyway.
Yeah. Or Street Fighter. No, I don't know.
Yeah. Right. Or yeah, sure. No, like absolutely. We also
Final
have,
Fantasy.
We have everything. Absolutely. We have everything organized like by like Daniel theme or like Miyagi Daniel theme neutral, like Miyagi Daniel theme uplifting. And that's all kind of organized for the editors too.
One of the things, and then I'll let you guys go because we've been going for a while here, but one of the things that we talked about before we officially started recording was how quickly you have to do this. And this is something that I talk a lot about on my show, is that so much of film scoring is just pure instinct and it happens so fast. How much time are you given to do each episode? I mean, how much iteration can you even do in an environment, you know, film and TV environment where you're just trying to submit and you're trying to get it to work? What's a typical episode like schedule wise?
We typically do two episodes at a time.
Ah.
Or we'll spot two episodes at a time and then maybe stagger turning them in by a day to 4 days, depending on kind of which ones are like really heavy lifting versus not. And I would say we usually turn those in maybe 10 days later.
Wow.
And sometimes shorter, sometimes like 6 days.
And we
record in blocks, three episodes at a time. And then we try to, every season, the finale is like so huge, that we try to separate the writing for that one by itself to give us like 10 days to just work on that. And then also separate the recording for that by itself, so we can like spend a couple days, cause it usually has a lot of music that's pretty involved writing, and the recording just takes longer, for every step of the process, drums, orchestra, guitar. So that's, I would say that's our typical turnaround. Like we'll do two episodes in like 10 to 12 days. But then they all kind of overlap. Like sometimes we'll spot two episodes on one Friday and we'll spot two more episodes the next Friday, but we haven't turned in, the last round yet. So once you add recording and mixing into the process, there is always a point in every season where like, in theory, there are eight episodes like in play at one time.
Oh,
like
God.
One of them's on the mix stage, like doing the final dub. So in theory, we don't have to do anything, but like our music editor might be making some like small edits. And in the meantime, we are like just starting to write, you know, whatever the last episode is. And like, while our music mixer, our scoring mixer is like mixing the two episodes just passed. And it's crazy. It makes for a crazy kind of like 3 months of the year.
Wow. So you do a whole season in 3 months, basically.
I would say usually about.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll see what it's like on the Netflix schedule. Cause
like COVID, you know, we haven't done this during COVID yet. So
Right. Maybe
things will be spread out more.
Right. Well, you guys, Zach and Leo, thanks so much for joining us on the Soundtrack Show, and congratulations on your success with Cobra Kai. It really is. It's just so much fun to listen to in the show and the soundtrack albums. Where can people find you? Where can they find your music? You want to talk about any other projects you have up and coming, or projects in the past in particular that you want to plug?
I'll say, well, all our albums are available streaming, and that includes our three soundtracks plus our video game soundtrack, which we didn't get a chance to talk about.
But
we did the Cobra Kai video game as well. And that was our true, that's a whole nother episode. Maybe we'll do that later, but
I have not played
it. It's a blast. It's so much fun. Talk about 90s music anyway. So we've got that. And then we've got, you know, La La Land put out our first season, and they, are actually putting out our second and third seasons, disc that is coming out. I think by the time this airs, it'll be out the 19th of January. So,
oh, great.
While you're listening to this, you could go to LaLaLand.records and pick those up. And there's a lot of bonus tracks on those CDs that will not be streaming.
Fantastic. That's great. Thanks again, you guys. And I know I'm not alone in saying that I absolutely cannot wait to hear what you do for season four. Of course, I'm sure we have a while to wait, but in the meantime, we can pick up your soundtracks. We can listen to your interviews. And thanks again for your contributions to the amazing franchise that is The Karate Kid. And thanks for so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us. And it's awesome to kind of be a part of, like, we like being a part of this like Karate Kid verse. So to be at the end of your Karate Kid series is really special. Thank you.
The Soundtrack Show is an iHeartRadio podcast. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.